The Gamers Haven Podcast at gamershavenpodcast.com in association with Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com, as well as the Vorpal Network at vorpalnetwork.com, are proud to present Gen Con 2010 coverage.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh! End of line.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. Huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com. Or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
Is there another press guy?
Absolutely.
I'm going to have
to arranging ways to make money?
Not really.
No, I was not arranging ways to make money. It would have been better if I had been.
You guys
to be honest, again, I apologize for keeping waiting. I was...
You've got my card.
I do have your card.
Yeah,
I'll do that. No, that would have been even better. Though I was in a naked arm wrestling competition in Finland at the convention I went to there.
Were the arms naked or was everyone naked?
Everyone was it.
Okay, it's appropriate.
That doesn't really seem like it would give you an edge in an arm wrestling.
No, but it makes it much more of a spectator sport.
I'm not gonna think about
makes it more of a mental game. It's hard to concentrate on arm wrestling when a dude's staring at your junk.
it's
your concentration falters. You lose focus.
And just a second.
How do you like your recorder?
What's up?
It is awesome. This is the recorder that picked up everything of Agnew stuff.
No, I'm not. Actually, I don't know the situation in the room right now.
I got a really crappy one for the moment purchase a long time ago. And it was actually
cool.
We'll
catch you there.
It was digital, but it didn't have any kind of...
I am Mike,
interface.
By the way.
Absolutely. Have we met before?
No, but you did an interview with the other guys from my podcast yesterday.
Oh,
and I was
yes,
too sick
indeed.
To show up for, I was actually
indeed.
Very
and I had the guilt inlaid ever in my book. I was giving
the Chalice
away,
of Secrets.
But I gave it away, you know.
What happened?
No, I'm just...
The interview that I missed yesterday.
He
gave away the Chalice of Secrets.
Didn't. Exactly.
All of the secrets.
I told them how the morning was going to end, but that bit, the recorders didn't make it. And you know.
They actually did lose the first 20 minutes of the recording.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
my fault.
Yeah, because you called and
told them I wasn't going to be there.
Canceled the thing. So no. The truth of the matter was, I had been waiting 2 hours in line to give Will Wheaton a copy of Gloom, and I'm still hoping I want to get him in on the Half Dice Will Travel.
Brandon,
so it wasn't actually about money. It was about trying to you know pursue
we're,
project.
We're all allowed to get our geek on at school.
Yeah, because it's you know, one of the whole things I'm trying to do with the Have Dice Will Travel is really try and sort of meet gamers from all different walks of life and say, okay, yes, I played a game with a guy who works at a convenience store and lives with his parents, and I'd really like to then be able to say, and here's a celebrity, you know, someone on a completely different end of the social strata, and, you know, again, these are all brought together.
Just don't try and shake Bull's hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Iron Guard salute.
Yeah, exactly.
And we were also on a book together, so, you know, had to get the books. Nice.
And now you're brothers.
But, anyhow. And, you know, the guild.
Yes. Nice.
So, how are you all?
Doing pretty well. I write for a blog called Troll in the Corner.
It's our, excellent.
The guy that that runs the blog is putting out a campaign setting for Pathfinder.
Nice.
So.
But,
And that's where the audio of this lovely time will appear. So.
Certainly. I hope that it is worth appearing and all. It means I can't tell you too many dirty secrets. Like, you know, I was going to say how the morning happened. And
I missed the chalice.
I can't.
But, it's okay.
But
okay,
you know,
for me.
Exactly. Exactly. But, and how have you been?
Okay.
Excellent.
Running on Mountain Dew fumes.
Yeah. I have not even had the Mountain Dew, so.
Get off your chair, but
the Starbucks right there.
Yeah, I'll have to get something at some point. But I'm already late, so. It'll wait. So, yeah. What do you want to talk about?
Go.
Okay, you're the guy recording.
I am.
Surely
the guy
you have a topic.
Oh, I don't necessarily have one, but I can always come up with one.
Go.
All right. So, how has the transition from 3rd edition to 4th been for Eberron? Like, how have you felt that that's worked for the property in general?
Okay, it depends how you define for the property. In terms of when we were doing it, when we were like, okay, we've got to make the campaign book and all of that, I didn't think it was bad at all.
Okay.
That basically a lot of people have said, well, how could you move Eberron to 4th when it was designed for 3rd?
Yeah.
And my point is, no, it wasn't. It was designed for D&D, which at the time happened to be 3rd.
Fair enough.
But the fact of the matter is that there's a number of things that are really integral to the flavor of Eberron that really clash with them. So the alignment system, I really like the fact that they've simplified it. It's still there, but having unaligned in there and just being able to say, well, the Blood of Vol is unaligned, you know, I really prefer that. It's less important. And, you know, there are no detect evil spells anymore. That kind of thing is a really great thing for Eberron. Rituals, as opposed to Vancian magic, make much more sense with the concept of industrialized magic. The idea that if I have the time and I have the residuum, I can do arcane lock all day. It can be my job. Now, I'll come back to that in a moment because there's issues there, but the basic principle is that makes much more sense than a guy who can cast arcane lock once per day somehow having a job as a locksmith.
Right.
The fact that NPCs and PCs don't follow the same rules, that NPCs can be minions, they should just have whatever skills you want them to have. If you want to have a one-hit point cook who is the best cook in the world and has, you know, a plus 18 cook modifier or whatever, you can just do it. She's just the best cook in the world, that's fine. You don't have to say she's an 18th level commoner, which therefore means she should have 18 hit dice and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So those are all things that I'm like, that's actually more what I wanted Eberron to be. Now, I'll say with rituals, I have a beef about rituals that one of these days I'll be putting up my house rules on Have Dice Will Travel, which is, I really like them in that sense of, okay, as opposed to Vancian magic, the locksmith can do locksmithing all day if he has the residual. Now, the problem with it is that what I really don't like is, by the rules as written, it's all about this ritual caster feat, and whoever's got it can use... and everyone, C.A. Solomon, author on Dragonmarked, Fates of Eberron, City of Stormreach, and many, 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 many other things like, oh, Blackmoor, you know, I mean, things like that. But...
He was just sitting over there the whole time.
Sorry, I just got here, or I would have called
you. Straight bias.
Ah, sorry. And anyhow, so the problem I have with it is that theoretically it's done by the Ritual Catastrophe, which lets you use any ritual book you have the skills for. So the thing that doesn't make sense is that takes all the flavor away. Because what it says is, I'm a locksmith, and I'm a locksmith because I have a book that says locksmith on it. And if I go to the Oracle down the street and we trade books, suddenly I'm an oracle. And that's just like, that just drains all the flavor out of magical society. So what I do for it is I say that the ritual caster feat represents a sort of level of brilliance and understanding of magical principles that most people just don't have.
Right.
And that the mage rite, just like in 3rd edition, where the mage rite only knows a few spells but can prepare them without a spell book, the mage rite knows a few rituals but can prepare them without a ritual book. So that the point is, the locksmith knows knock, arcane lock, alarm. Those are his things. He doesn't need the book, he's done them. You know, he spent 3 years learning those rituals, and those are the only rituals he knows. And if he spent another 3 years, he can learn something else, but it takes a while. Whereas your character is the person who just gets how magic works, and you're able to just sort of skim it and say, yeah, okay, I got that.
Yeah,
and that's part of what makes you brilliant.
You're
a hero.
You're bringing the trained sorcerer back to 4th edition.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of the point is, I think rituals really help the concept of an industrial magical society if you throw that concept
in. They're implemented properly, yeah.
But beyond that, I mean, as you know, if you've read the books, we didn't really make any dramatic changes to 4th edition. We just added a couple sort of, oh, hey, and Eladrin are off here in the dark corners of the world, and there's these new folks in the Mornland, and, you know, sort of a few extra things that could have been there all along that haven't had a big impact on history.
Cool.
It was just something.
I'm not as directly familiar with the Eberron setting.
Get out! What are you doing here?
No, I
Mike, you're on.
Yes. Spotlight.
I definitely know of it, and I appreciate it as a property, but I've just never had the time to pick it up. So I was curious as to whether or not it went through a big change, like, say, Forgotten Realms.
No,
because
not remotely.
I mean, that was like...
The thing is, Forgotten Realms have been around for 20 years. Eberron have been around for 5.
True.
And
you don't have a whole lot of history to...
And that we talked about advancing it 2 years, mm-hmm. and just advancing it a little... But the eventual decision on that was, why do that? That basically the game's been out so little that all you're really going to do is, our thought was, oh, and we can advance like the political situation between Droem and Breyland and something within the Church of the Silver Flame. And the problem is we're then like, but yeah, what about the people who've been playing this for 5 years and have had their own setup with Droem and the Silver Flame, and we suddenly come in and say it was this other thing? We're just screwing up their whole campaign.
Yeah.
And the idea for 4th edition was that you ought to be able to just pick up your current campaign and drop it in 4th and carry right on.
There's just something about the flavor of something like Forgotten Realms that if you change the power structures within that world, it feels very customized. Whereas Eberron seems like it's set up to be that way.
Now, the funny thing, of course, for me with Eberron and 4th edition was Forgotten Realms, is that suddenly Forgotten Realms comes in and there's an incredible magical cataclysm that's destroyed vast areas of magically transformed land and people who have marks on their skin that grant them magical powers. And sort of like, huh. Where have we heard that before? And like, we literally, when we got to doing dragon marks for 4th edition, we're like, well, an obvious way to do them would be like, oh, spell scars. But those have been done. So, you know, I'm not entirely sure why, you know, they had to sort of pick these things that were very sort of Eberron-y themes and suddenly make them central to, Yeah.
Well, that kind of corners you into what you did, which is making it not the big change that the show.
Well, but this is exactly the point, what you said, is that part of me, and I have no reason to think this is the case, I'm not a wizard's employee,
right.
But part of me feels that it was saying, oh, people like this sort of thing, people like the big thing, whereas the thing to me is that Eberron and Forgotten Realms, to me, their strengths have always been that they're different, that it's not that there is one right world, it is that if you want a world,
right.
You know, in Forgotten Realms, you can tell a story like the Time of Troubles that you simply cannot tell in Eberron because the gods do not walk the earth.
Right.
You know, if you want the high fantasy with the great wizards and the evil drow empire, boom, you've got it. And you can't tell that story in Eberron. In Eberron, you can tell the story about the corruption within the Church of the Silver Flame, about, you know, the misunderstandings that's led to the whole conflict between the Blood of Vol and the Silver Flame, you know, all this sort of thing. That isn't there in Forgotten Realms because religion there isn't about faith. It's about just fact.
Yeah.
You know, rather than saying all of our worlds are going to have a huge magical wasteland and magical things, having Forgotten Realms be that different world that has these ancient established cultures and 10 million cultures and they match up to places in the world, to me that's like, okay, let it be its own different thing. Embrace that. But what do I know?
What you should do then is put a Mithranor in Eberron.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna, well, and we've had debates, like, you know, this was a big thing, actually, in doing 4th edition ever, was we had a lot of debates when they brought me up there about, okay, do we add spider-worshipping drow into ever? And, like, one of the discussions... Well, and, like, one of the discussions that came up was, okay, we need to make gnolls worship, you know, because all the gnoll flavor text elsewhere is about that, and people need to know what to do with that in Eberron. And my point is, that's silly. They've got that. If they want to know what to do with it, they can figure it out. You can drop you know who in Eberron. That's not hard. The point of a setting, the point of buying a setting book is to give you new ideas. You know, having the gnoll brotherhood, you know, this near pact in Droam, to me the whole point is, and this is a whole different way to handle gnomes. If you want something different, here's an idea.
Gnomes too, right?
Yeah, gnomes. If the whole book, yeah, if the whole book was, here's how to use Orcus, here's how to use Wolf, here's how to use spider worshiping drow, what have you got that's actually worth having? You know?
Yes, so. We've been spending money twice on the same stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, it was the same thing with Plains. There was a big discussion about, well, dude, we just jam the new core cosmology into Eberron. And my thing is, we didn't do it with 3rd. There was a core cosmology in 3rd, and we chose not to jam it in there because it was interesting to have a different cosmology.
Plus, constrained cosmology around.
Yeah, and so we compromise on this. Okay, it is Thelanus, but you can call it the Feywild, and if you have Feywild stuff, put it in Thelanus, and it works that way. You know, you can easily use your other stuff, but there was a big argument as to whether it was just going to be forget Shavarath, forget Thelanus, it's just the Feywild and the Shadowfell now. And to me, again, it was just like, why strip away
all the value?
Yeah, why strip away the things? And, well, I mean, a really good example of this is the Dragon Marks. Because it's this balance of, are you serving people mechanically or are you serving them with story? So Dragon Marks, there was a force, which as you see came out, that was basically saying Dragon Marks should be usable by any character. You should not have them restricted by race. And to me it was like, this is a key part of the setting. It is not simply that these marks exist, it is that they are tied to families, and because of the marks, those families have power and influence in the setting. And in the case of some of the families, it is literally a family and racial, you know, in Lirindar, it is like a pillar of the half-elven race that they have this house. And if you just make it, oh, a mixed house of all sorts of people, it loses them.
They needed to be crazier.
And their, you know, the counterpart of that is that, well, the people pick up this book, or for that matter, don't pick up this book, but just use the DDI, you know, compendium, aren't necessarily playing in Eberron. They may just want to get a bunch of new feats that they can use in Forgotten Realms. And in Forgotten Realms, it doesn't necessarily make sense that half-orcs have the Mark of Finding. It doesn't fit that thing. So it's tying the mechanic to the setting when their goal was to say anyone can use anything anywhere. There is no Forgotten Realms mechanic. You can use it anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's this, one side is the designer saying, I want this to be as useful to everyone as possible. And the other side is saying, but you completely undermine the setting by doing that, which is more important. And again, the compromise we had was to say there are no prerequisites on the feat, but within the campaign setting, it very clearly spells out in Eberron, these are tied to these races. If you do have it and you're not from these races, you are a weird freak and could get hunted down by the houses. But I mean, that again was a very big clash of philosophy on, is this as useful to players as possible, or is the story of the setting of more importance?
When Fourth first came out, you know, they had their basic points of light setting, right? And you've got the massive change of the Forgotten Realms. You've got Eberron following shortly on the heels of all of that. And now you've got the recent launch of Dark Sun, which is another hugely classic property.
Yep.
You've got Gamma World, which is even more classic than Dark Sun. Do you ever feel like Eberron's the odd man out? Like, that it didn't... Because you're talking about the compromises that have had to be made, had
yep.
this sort of unifying feel, but then here come these two old settings are distinct in a way that Forgotten Realms was homogenized.
No. So my feeling is quite the reverse.
Okay.
Which is A, I forget what A was, so we'll move on to B.
Perfect.
B is that the whole point is I think they learned. I think that they realized that, yeah, people don't want a setting book that is just, here's how to use everything from the previous world. I think it was an understanding that, you know, story, people love a setting mm-hmm. because of the story. That's what they come to the setting for, is the story of the setting. And so I think that with something like Dark Sun, they realize people want the flavor of Dark Sun.
Right.
And, I feel that Eberron, when we were working on it, you have to understand it was just coming out.
Mm-hmm.
That is fourth edition.
Yeah.
It had just been released. So, I mean, there wasn't even a lot of time to see how people were responding
to
fourth edition.
Was unknown at that point.
So I think it was just at that time they were very strongly, we really want the setting books to sell fourth edition, if you will.
Right.
And now they've realized that doesn't have to be the role of the setting book. The setting book can be stronger. But I'll point out, you know, you're sort of saying, was Eberron the odd man out? I'd argue that Forgotten Realms is the odd man out, because Forgotten Realms is the one that was completely transformed and changed for 4th edition.
Yeah.
Whereas Eberron, you know, yeah, only had minor adjustments.
And Dark Sun just picks up where it left off.
Yeah. Now, Dark Sun, of course, I haven't had a chance to really look at it closely, but also only gets a single book. It gets, you know, a campaign book as opposed to
Player's
campaign
Guide
and player.
Do you know how...
Yep.
Do you know how the ownership works? Because, like, Aethys.org acquired some of the property.
I have no idea. I mean, again, I'm not a Wizards employee, so... I didn't, you know, put the name and face together at first, so...
I'm one of your stalkers.
I know. Well, you know, at the moment, I understand you're still my AD on.
No.
Someone else.
I will be though.
Wow.
Have no fear. I will be. Yeah.
That's great.
Someone pushed it out. But that will not stand.
Okay, so you got to snipe. You're gonna get in there.
And I already talked to Steve about that, but he's like, no, I'm gonna let it happen. So I'm like, okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, at least you're in the Sunday game.
Oh, I will be in both. I have no doubt.
So, this is a game I'm running for charity tomorrow night.
Yeah, he mentioned it.
And it's gonna be interesting. So, I'm trying something a little different, and you know, trying as best as I can to get it all ready in time. So I'm hoping. It all goes off without a hitch, you know.
So, as always happens when I end up reading, you know, discussions that you have or talking with you, you know, questions pop into my head as we're talking, and I'm wondering, did you have much input into what became the Umbergen versus, you know, what you made the Sulitar, you know, because they just don't seem to mix. And so I'm wondering, you know, how that actually all played out behind the scenes.
Explain what you mean by how they don't mix, and I'll just so I can answer the question more clearly.
I mean, at a high level, you know, they are, you know, wild jungle dwelling drow, but the Sulitar, and I can never remember their counterpart.
So there's three drow groups. So just explain. Yeah, so just explaining all the drow and where they all came from. We started off with the Vokori, of whom the Kaltiar are one of the clans. But the Vokori are the sort of common drow culture. And they are the drow who basically survived the cataclysm on the surface, turned on the giants. And they are the sort of giant haters, if you will. For the most part. I mean, some of them don't even care about the giants. The giants are an issue, you know. But they're the surface culture that has sort of changed their ways. They have developed their own culture. The Sulatar are the culture that stayed on the surface and basically clung to the old ways of the giants. They remained in the giant cities. They held on to the elemental binding techniques. And so they're sort of the, we never lost our civilization, drow, but we held on to the civilization of our masters.
Hence you know, why they guard the...
Why they guard the cities, and that why they're still believing that the promise of flame... Essentially, the idea is you sort of have a sort of slave religion, that, you know, the Sula League, you know, told them, this is who you are, this is your purpose, we've created you for this holy purpose, and you will get a reward when all is done. And they've stuck to that. They've said, yep, sooner or later, our reward is coming. You know, we will follow the old ways.
Any millennia now.
The Umbrogen come from a completely different place. The Umbrogen were created for the Dragon Shard computer game.
Right.
And the thing that's sad about that is they did not get the story or the spotlight that they were supposed to have. I basically designed three campaigns for that. And first off, a lot of my story got sort of tweaked and changed after I, you know, was no longer on the project. Second, the Umbrogen story got completely pulled out. And the Umbrogen story was much more what made them Eberron characters, of basically saying these are not just evil. That the point of the Umbrogen is that when the Cataclysm came, they went underground. They said, we're getting out of here. And that they built a nation underground. And that then one of the Dalkeer and army of aberrations came up and said, oh, great, this is fun. We're going to wipe you out. And that they bonded with the Umbra basically as a, we need to do this. This is our only weapon. We have got, you know, the survival of our species depends on finding a weapon to right. fight this force. So it's the idea of to fight a monster, they become monsters. And that now they're still losing. And that they're coming up to the surface basically saying, we need more. We need something. And so the idea of them in Dragon Shard was very much, okay, they're against the Silver Flame, they're against whatever, but not because, oh, they want to conquer the world or whatever. It's because they want to survive.
Right.
You know, they just need some source of power to fight off. And if there was ever an expansion, the expansion was going to be the Cults of the Dragon Below. And it would be, here's your army with your rune hounds and your Dolgrims and, you know, your beholders and such, which I was thinking was going to be awesome. And so one of the things is I feel the Umbrogen have never really had the proper presentation that I would like to have seen them have. But they are supposed to be completely different from the Sulatar because the idea is those cultures split 20,000 years ago. You know, that they have had almost no contact and that compared to the other two, the Umbrogen have furthermore essentially sold their souls. You know, they have made this what amounts to a warlock's pact as a race. And that they've become this other thing. And
did that come up when you were working on the fourth edition? Because I mean, it seems like they'd have been a great drop-in for the, you know, the tieflings.
Essentially, I mean, they are the tieflings. You know, I mean, they aren't the tieflings because they're drow. But I mean,
right.
if you look to the tiefling story, that's the Umbrogen. They have made a pact as a race with a thing. And again, you know, it's not something a new Umbrogen has any choice about. It was
right.
a pact made by their race long ago. And that the idea is sort of the more powerful they get. So difference between them and a tiefling is the idea with the Umbrogen is the more powerful you get, you know, the greater your warlock powers become. And warlock was actually listed as their favorite class in third. The greater your warlock powers become, the less human you become. That essentially it's like you've got a spark of it in your soul and your power grows because it grows. You are sort of its host and it's right. how much are you letting it reach through the world into you. So it's that, again, how much are you willing to sacrifice to save your nation?
Gotcha.
Gotcha.
So I really like the Umbergen, but like I said, I don't feel they've ever had a flavor. And again, they are different from the Volcori and the Sulitar. They're, you know, a very different thing, which is why I didn't try and fit them in the Shattered Land. I mean, they're just a totally different
right.
thing, you know. So yeah, like that.
I hate to have ask a non-leading question, but will in your own you know creative imaginings, do you have anything solid for the further adventures of Lady Decana?
So in my creative mind, yes. If I wrote more books, if I wrote another Thorn book at this point, I would try and have Liam Pierce show up in it. Just because I did, that was sort of my original plan, hang on a second, taking off, Colin?
I have not.
Oh, okay. So,
are you around for a while?
I'm going to be around for at least an hour, and then we'll see what happens after that. And, so basically, yeah, I mean, when I was writing things like The Son of Kyber and such, you know, originally, the whole point is that originally I had planned to do another trilogy about those characters. And, you know, when the reason The Dreaming Dark ends the way it does is because I thought, okay, this is equivalently as a TV show, this is the end of season one, we've got a cliffhanger and we're going to move into season two. You know, we've left all these questions that we've sort of now discovered this answer, but the answer leads us to say, where's it going from here? You know, and so I expected to do that, and basically what I was originally planning was the next book would start with Dane and Zusasar having split off and then go to and what happened to Pierce and Lane, you know. And so essentially I still want to tell that story. And I'll also say that something I wanted to do, but just in the end it was just too much. It was just, there's a limit to how much back information I can cram into a story that it doesn't really belong in. The third Thorn novel is called The Fading Dream. The Fading Dream is a new thing in 4th edition, and it's an organization of sort of Nightmare Eladrin, essentially. And their citadel, Tirlian Doresh, is a place that exists both on Dalkor and Eberron simultaneously. So the idea is that from either, you can walk into the Citadel. It's simply that when you leave, you'll go back to whichever one you came from. But that while you're in it, you can actually shake hands with a quarry, you know, so on and so forth. And I was really, in my original outline for the book, I was really wanting Thorin to actually run into Jode and Dane in there. And I was just like, when I was finally getting there, I'm just like, this is just too much for people who don't know those books and are like, who are the, you know, and...
because it'd be, and, you know, minor spoiler alert, but another appearance of Dane.
Right. And
just be like...
Well, and this is the point of, okay, for the people who know the whole story, it would be like, oh, okay, so there's the thing. For people who don't, it would just be like, wait, huh, what? And again, it would take explanation.
Right.
And it's like, this book doesn't need...
Right.
A whole bunch of explanation that's really me wanting to answer the questions that got left hanging.
This makes sense, because I once remarked to you that Thorn ties up a lot more cleanly than Dreaming Dark ever Dreaming Dark does.
Right.
Like, even internally.
Right.
And so
which
that,
is a lesson.
Now that makes a lot more sense.
I mean, basically, the point is that I didn't think, I thought Dreaming Dark was going to keep going.
Okay.
And if I had known that it wasn't, I would have tied it up a lot more cleanly. And, you know, what I've learned is don't make that assumption. You know, you got to make sure that you're happy with the ending in its own sake.
Do you feel constrained by that?
A little. I mean, with The Dreaming Dark, I didn't want to answer every question at the end. But yeah, so the answer is I'd love to do something else with Lee. I don't know if I'll have an opportunity. You know, it's I don't think legally I can just write a Lee story myself.
No.
And so...
Well, at least not get it published.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't even know. I don't know if I could put it up on my website or not.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, I have no problem with just writing something and putting it up on my website if I'm allowed to do it. I
right.
just don't know if Wizards would have a problem with that. I think it sort of depends. If they, for example, stop producing Eberron books, then I could probably contact them and say, look, you're not doing any more Eberron books. Do you mind if I just for free on my website, I just do something? And they might not mind, but if they are still producing things,
yeah.
they might be like, no, this is our intellectual property, we might do something with it.
Right.
A lot of people.
To that end, have you thought about starting work, or have you started work on a different setting with a different... I mean, obviously,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
you got something going, you can't... You know,
no,
but,
no,
like,
no.
System,
I want to. So it's been on my list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically, it is something that I plan to do. The thing right now is I've been traveling.
Right.
And I'm also doing full-time world design on an unannounced MMO right now.
Cool.
And so that's a big amount of creative
right.
work.
I, yes, for sure.
But basically, sort of, it's the next thing on my list, and it's something that I'm probably going to do on Half Dice Will Travel as a sort of, hey, watch this world as it comes together, let me know what you think, you know, sort of thing. Because, yeah, that is the thing, is that the thing with Eberron is I can't do whatever I want with Eberron.
Right.
I can't produce a new Eberron adventure, and I would like to be able to... produce new adventures,
right.
to write new stories. And so, yeah, I mean, it is something I want to do.
Yeah,
it's just going to be a question.
Because I'll say, for someone who is, I mean, unfamiliar, basically, with Eberron, hearing you talk about it makes me want to look at the books, you
mm-hmm.
know, which, I mean, that kudos to you. That's awesome. Cause,
thank you.
You know, so it, I'm now personally interested to be like, well, there's not going to be any more Eberron, so what's next from this
right.
guy who is interested in me in something, you know. And since I play Pathfinder, I can pick up 3-5 books, and I'm like,
sure.
Yeah.
And that's the point is, you know, whatever system one does, or if I do
yeah.
a sort of system neutral and then offer choices in different things,
right.
Again, I want to do something new.
Cool.
So I can really explore some other ideas that I've had. And it's the case with Eberron, that I really like Eberron, but there were things that I would have liked to do that I couldn't, because... Again,
I'm
not
controlled. It's your first published setting. I mean, you know,
so
a lot.
Oh, and it's and this is the thing is a lot of people have said to me, "Oh, how could you give up control? How could you sell it?" You know, and to me, I'm like, no question at all. I got $120,000, and there's people in Finland who love my setting.
Yeah,
that was awesome. You know, and because the answer is because I can make another world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the big difference between Eberron and something like Forgotten Realms is that Forgotten Realms was Ed Greenwood's baby. You know,
yeah.
when he sold
right.
it to Wizard, you know, to TSR,
yeah.
he had like a basement full of stuff on Eberron.
Uh-huh.
He had a basement full of stuff on Eberron. I stole it. He had a basement full of stuff on Forgotten Realms. I made up Eberron for the Fantasy Setting Search. So
right.
yeah, when people say, how can you sell it? I'm like, I just made it up.
That was kind of
I make up another one tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, I made up 7 things for the Fantasy Setting Search. I could use any one of those. So I do have, and in fact, I do have
that's really
specific
cool.
ideas I want to explore.
Awesome.
You know, I have
I'm
things
not
that are
steal those from your basement.
They're not fully formed enough to steal from my basement. But like I said, keep an eye on the website because I really do. Probably not for the next month. I really have to finish
right.
up my sort of work on this other project. But I really do want before the end of the year to really get. The Half Dice Will Travel site up and active and really having a lot of things on it.
What other game systems do you like to use? I mean,
there's
a plethora out there
sure.
right now. So,
I have not yet played Savage Worlds. I finally downloaded the PDF, so I have it. I just haven't had a chance. So, I mean, from what everyone tells me, I'm like, okay, sounds like this is awesome. I need to play this.
If you have time, I have a module prepared that I ran for some
I do not.
I'm just saying,
I wish I did. Gen Con is just crazy for me.
Yes.
Because, I mean, first I've got the 10 hours of the game I'm running.
Mm-hmm.
Second, I've still got a lot of stuff to just prepare for the game tomorrow. And then also, this is work for me.
Yes.
You know, this is, I have like a half dozen, you know, a dozen people that I need to find, catch up with, show things to. So, just grabbing a couple hours, as you can see, I was late here. You know, I mean, just having a couple hours just
yeah.
to hang out is like... a relaxing thing. But it is funny because I'm like, I used to come to a convention and just like play games at a convention.
Yeah.
Sometimes I go to conventions and get to do that, especially smaller ones. You know, you go to like a 300-person convention, then yeah, I can just chill. Yeah. The problem here is this is the convention where all the publishers are, where all the other game writers are. So this is my catch up with people I may be working with in a future convention.
For sure.
Now I forget the... Oh, yeah, systems.
Yeah.
So Savage Worlds is sort of on my list of, oh, I have to check that out. I also just picked up Dread, which I love the idea of, but again, have never had a chance to play.
Yep.
But I mean, for the last 2 years, I've been like, oh, what a great idea! You know, I just haven't had a chance to play it.
They're personal friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
If you have time at all, I can make it happen.
Not during the con,
but I'll certainly keep you posted, because I do want to travel around again. I understand they're in Wisconsin, are they? Or?
They're all over, actually.
Okay.
There's the two head honchos, three if you count one of their lead story writers. Two of them are in Bloomfield, Indiana, just got married. And the other one is in Madison, Wisconsin. So it's a little, unless it's a con, it's hard to get them together.
Right. To be honest, I haven't played much Pathfinder, but the way of it is that basically I have this game I've been running all around the world that I've run 45 times now. And I've run it in 4th edition, and I've run it in Over the Edge, which is my other favorite system. And Pathfinder's next on my list. I'm like, I've got to convert it to Pathfinder just for D&D people who don't.
Did you just say that you run Eberron and Over the Edge?
Yeah.
I tried to do that, and I kept thinking to myself, I should reach out to Keith and see if he's ever done this. And I'm like, no. Over the Edge is such a wonderful setting that it's so easy to just eat that up. And
it's a little tricky because Over the Edge is one of my favorite systems, and it's very, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but
I'm
it's
not.
Very rules light, very abstract, and which is what I like about it.
Yeah.
A huge emphasis on player creativity. Thing about it is not a game that is good for really combat heavy scenarios.
Right, it's an aspect as mechanic.
Gotcha. Right, so it's very good for sort of intrigue, mystery, all that sort of stuff. But what I find is if I use it for an adventure, if I just convert an adventure over and it's a adventure, if it has like a combat, maybe two, that's fine.
Yeah.
The system is versatile enough to support that. It's just that it's not a tactical game, so if you have a lot of combats, people start running out of ways to actually make this one different.
Yeah.
You know? And furthermore, because of the way the system is designed, combat is actually very dangerous. You know, it is the kind of thing where one good sword stroke can kill you.
Right.
And because it's designed for more of a William S. Burroughs naked lunch sort of scenario, and not a I'm an action hero fighting a horde of orcs setting. So again, I love it.
Cool.
But I like running Eberron. So that's what I've been doing, is doing those. But I'm like, I need to convert it to Pathfinder because I want to go up and run it for the Paizo people.
Right.
And next would be Savage Worlds, probably.
Cool. Well, I actually have to get going.
Okay.
Stuff. Keith, thank you
much. Thanks for coming.
It's been a blast.
Absolutely.
Pleasure
sorry to
you.
Keep you waiting.
Oh.
Paying attention now?
Yes.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking
about. We do know what we're talking about. You know, we called the whole Hugo Weaving Red Skull thing, remember?
Oh, right. Fine. Where was it? The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about all kinds of gaggles.
Aaron, could you cut it with the gaggles thing? It's not working for me.
All right. Fine. The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games.
Don't forget that we talk about, you know, Bruce Campbell and Christopher Lee, obviously.
Natalie Portman.
All right, guys! I'm trying to do a commercial for the Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games, tabletop gaming, all kinds of other geek stuff.
You mean that show we broadcast on Ustream?
Yes!
Wednesday, 8 Central Standard Time.
Right, at redphonezone.com. Now, can you guys just give me a minute to get this promo done?
Sure, sorry, dude.
Yeah.
All right, from the top. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone.
Aaron, we need a tiebreaker. Okay. Who would win in a fight with Galactus?
Anti-Monitor.
Galactus and Anti-Monitor. Come on.
I think the more important question would be who would win in a fight between me and you two idiots.
I guess we don't know what we're talking about.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.